From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Whoa. Is it that time already? I guess it is. Welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin, on this November 13th, 2013. What a game last night, people. MSU show why they are among the nation's best. Oh, wait. Well, they now are the best. Yes, taking down the Kentucky Wildcats 78-74, your final last night, and becoming the number one ranked team in the nation. Boy, did the Spartans look good. We'll be diving into this game in just a second and taking your calls throughout the entire show. If you caught last night's game and want to share your thoughts on this year's team, call in at 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. Or you can go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and leave a comment or even tweet me at Al Martin WKAR. Again, we want to hear your thoughts on MSU's win last night over Kentucky. Also, want to remind you all that you can be in the TV studio audience tonight. That's right, Current Sports TV, folks. Well, my guest on Current Sports TV is Ali Easley. He's a boxing trainer and founder of the Help a Willing Kid Foundation. Now, recording takes place at 6:30 p.m. tonight at WKAR Studios on the MSU campus. Seats are totally free, but reservations are strongly recommended because seating is limited. That's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, and guest Ali Easley. To reserve your free seats and be in that audience, visit WKAR.org. You will even get a chance to see me hop in the ring and try my hand at this boxing thing. You do not want to miss that, all right? Well, let's get to our show for today. Also want to note that later on in the show, we'll be talking about, you know, we love to cover different sports here on Current Sports and discuss different sports to go beyond, you know, your typical football and basketball conversation. You know, we've talked about CrossFit in the past, even curling here on Current Sports. And today we want to dive into the world of bodybuilding. I will be talking with Nissan Weaver, who is an acclaimed bodybuilder from the state of Michigan. She will be talking about the sport and its relation to femininity and women. So you do not want to miss that discussion. That's coming on later on in the hour. In the meantime, here are your current sports headliners for this November 13th, 2013. All right, the number two Spartans hung on for a 78-74 victory over top-ranked Kentucky after trailing by as much as 13 in the second half, looking like the freshmen most of them are. The Wildcats show why there's so much hype surrounding them. Julius Randle almost beat the Spartans single-handedly, scoring 23 of his 27 points. Yes, in the second half, just in the second half alone, and making a jumper with 42 seconds left that cut MSU's lead to just 2 points. Now, Michigan State outscored Kentucky 25-13 in transition on Tuesday, and Keith Appling led the Spartans with 11 points in transition, making all four of his attempts. Now, Appling came within 2 rebounds and 2 assists of a triple-double, finishing with 22 points, 8 rebounds, and 8 assists. Gary Harris had 20 points, and Adrian Payne was fantastic. He also had 15 points and 4 rebounds for the Spartans. Also want to note that this was the earliest 1-versus-2 matchup and first since February 23, 2008, when Tennessee beat top-ranked Memphis. And guess who the Tigers' coach was at that time? No other than John Calipari. How about that, huh? That's some food for thought for you. All right, Duke and Kansas were also in action. They were the second game of that doubleheader at the United Center in Chicago, Illinois last night. Andrew Wiggins scored 16 of his 22 points in the second half, outplaying Jabari Parker down the stretch and helping the fifth-ranked Jayhawks knock off number 4 Duke 94-83 on Tuesday night. Now, Parker, a former prep star at nearby Simeon High School, had 27 points. Yes, 27, folks. 9 rebounds and 2 steals in a spectacular return to his hometown. But it was Wiggins who made the biggest plays in the final minutes of a thriller between two-story programs. Now, Wiggins drained a step-back jumper to give the Jayhawks an 85-81 lead with 1:33 to go, and then had a fast break dunk as a trailing Parker picked up his fifth foul. Wiggins held out his arms and yelled after the big dunk, delighting the crazy crowd at the United Center. Now, Perry Ellis also finished with 24 points, and Wayne Selden had 15 for the Jayhawks, who went 27-35 at the foul line, compared to 16-28 for the Duke Blue Devils. Wiggins also had 8 rebounds despite battling foul trouble for much of the game. Kansas scored 17 of the final 23 points after Rashid Solomon made a jumper for Duke that tied it at 77 with 3:50 left. It was a great doubleheader last night, and that's how it should be done, folks. I was really excited that college basketball decided to put together this doubleheader, and MSU topping this Kentucky team, now number one in the nation. We're going to be diving into that game in just a second as Alex and Matt are going to join me. But also here, let me just finish up your headlines really quick. On Tuesday afternoon, before University of Michigan men's basketball team tipped off against South Carolina State in its second game of the season, head coach John Beilein named fifth-year senior Jordan Morgan and senior/junior John Horford and sophomore Glenn Robinson III as team captains for this season. Robinson is the fourth sophomore in the history of the Michigan basketball program to be named captain. Now, the last player to be named captain as a sophomore was former three-time captain Zach Novak, who was in the stands at Chrysler Center for Michigan's victory against the Bulldogs. Now, Michigan went on a cruise to a 93-59 win. The Wolverines recorded, get this, 15 triples. Yes, one shy of tying the school record. Sophomore Karis LeVert had a career-high 24 points on 7-for-11 shooting, while fellow sophomore Nick Stauskas, he was right behind him with 23 and also a career best. Sophomore Glenn Robinson III, he scored 12 and grabbed 9 rebounds, while freshman Derek Walton Jr. was Michigan's final double-digit scorer of the night, putting up 12. John Horford set a new career high in rebounds for the second straight game, pulling down 15 boards, including 5 from the offensive glass. So that wraps up your mid-Michigan area NCAA hoops action. Also, let's head to the NBA real quick and talk about the Pistons. The Detroit Pistons' road woes continued last night as Stephen Curry and the Golden State Warriors blew them out, 113-95. Curry had 25 points on 10 shots and rested during the fourth quarter. The Warriors dominated the first half, building a 19-point lead in the opening quarter and a 21-point halftime advantage. Really ugly for the Pistons last night. Though the Pistons did cut the lead to 15 in the second half, the Warriors promptly went on a 23-10 run to effectively seal the deal. Now, while Greg Monroe, Brandon Jennings, and Josh Smith struggled offensively, the entire team had problems on the defensive end, allowing the Warriors to shoot 60% from the floor and 50% from three-point range. Now, the lone bright spot was Luigi Datome, who had 10 points off the bench and hit 2 3-pointers. Come on, Maurice Cheeks. You got to play Gigi. Play him, man. It was good to see him out in the court. 10 points again for Luigi Datome. All right, Timberwolves ban hazing. The Jonathan Martin, Richie Incognito saga is rippling through locker rooms, even those in different sports. Minnesota Timberwolves rookie Shabazz Muhammad was asked by management to return a Jonas Brothers backpack his teammates had got him, and the club has reportedly banned rookie hazing altogether. Muhammad told the LA Times that, quote, "They actually said they don't want us carrying them, but I understand with the stuff going on with the football thing, they want to be separate from that. Now I think rookie hazing won't exist anymore." Now, other clubs are taking a similar stance, and the NBA in particular has cracked down on bullying and hazing, with the commissioner's office sending out a memo issuing a zero-tolerance policy. How about that? All right, Red Wings. As bad as the Pistons have been on the road, the Red Wings may be worst at home. The Wings dropped their 6th straight game on home ice, losing 3-2 to the Winnipeg Jets in a shootout. Despite the loss, Coach Mike Babcock, he liked his team's play, saying, quote, "We didn't win, but I thought we played good. I liked our game today, start to finish. We made some mistakes. But I liked our penalty kill. I liked our power play. I liked our game. I feel really good. Pavel Datsyuk, he scored both Red Wings goals, and Winnipeg's Andrew Ladd, he put home the winner past Jimmy Howard in the shootout. Howard finished with 19 saves. All right, some local action around here, some local news and sports that we want to give to you. Chuck Block resigned on Tuesday as Lansing Community College men's and women's cross country and track coach. Block has provided opportunities for area high school runners after they graduate for the past 13 seasons as the LCC head coach. He also has been the acting director to many race events like Turkeyman Trot 5K each Thanksgiving and other youth club and charity races. Block said, quote, "It was one of the most stressful years of my life. There were days I didn't know if I could get it all done. I have three grandkids, and I want to spend more time with them and do more with the foundation." Now, the LCC women finished fourth of 34 teams at the National Junior College Athletic Association meet, on Saturday before his resignation. All right, in the National League, Pirates head coach Clint Hurdle was named National League Manager of the Year in the MLB from battling Baseball Writers Association of America. Under Hurdle, the Pirates broke through for their first winning season since 1992 and made their first playoff appearance in 21 years. Now, Hurdle led the Pirates to a 15-win improvement and a 94-68 record. And in the American League, Terry Francona, he earned top manager after leading the Cleveland Indians to their first postseason since 2007. He narrowly beat out Boston Red Sox manager John Farrell. So there you have that. Also note that Dwayne Bowe, you gotta hear this, folks. A team source told ESPN on Wednesday that wide receiver Dwayne Bowe will likely play against the Denver Broncos this Sunday despite his arrest. Bowe was arrested last Sunday for speeding and possession of a controlled substance. Now, according to police, Bowe was stopped for driving 48 miles per hour in a 35 miles per hour zone. While questioning Bowe, the officer detected a marijuana odor coming from Bowe's car. Now, a canine search turned up the two containers in a black bag, also a backpack with marijuana inside of it. The Chiefs issued a statement Tuesday saying they were aware of Bowe's arrest and that they have no further comment at the moment. Now, he was Kansas City's first-round draft pick in 2007 out of LSU and signed a five-year, $56 million contract and served a four-game suspension in 2009 for a violation of the league's policy on performance in enhancing substances. So, well, those are your current sports headliners for this November 13th, 2013. If you want to comment on any of those, you know that you can give us a call right here at the Current Sports Studio by dialing 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. And our current sports question of the day concerns the MSU men's basketball team, who now takes over the number one spot. Yes, the best college basketball team in the nation after its win over Kentucky last night in Chicago at the United Center. What were your thoughts on the game, and just how good is this Spartan basketball team this year? Give us a call, 517-355-9527. All right, we're going to dive into last night's game. It was certainly a great win. Again, MSU topping Kentucky. I'm joined by Alex and Matt right now. Wow, guys, entertaining game to say the least. I started biting my nails as the game went on in that second half. Julius was he's going to be special for Kentucky. But overall, guys, what were your impressions of last night's game?
Just the better, more advanced team won. Kyle Perry said it himself, "It's a little unfair because I have seven freshmen." But Michigan State come prepared, and they won the game. That's all there was to it.
Honestly, for me, for a game in mid-November that I kept telling myself meant nothing, I was on the edge of my seat. It was a great night for college basketball,
Yeah. Just
in general, with the doubleheader, too. I mean, the Kansas-Duke game was perfectly entertaining, too, but this was, I think, the marquee matchup, and it was nice to see MSU actually win one of these big-time early-season matchups against a top team.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, you know, I wish it would happen more often when you where you see, you know, one and two or, you know, just a top five or top 10 ranked teams going at it early in the season. I mean, I think this is great. The NCAA got it right on this one. And, you know, it was a fun time. It felt like a Final Four almost in November. You know what I mean? It was a great time. And MSU, they definitely flexed their muscle. I tell you that. And it showed that, you know, experience. This Kentucky team is still very, very young. You got a lot of freshmen on that team. A lot of talent, don't get me wrong. But they need more time to gel. And, you know, Calipari saying it's not, first of all, I don't agree with his comments at all with, you know, about it being unfair, an unfair matchup against Michigan State. I don't agree with that at all. I mean, that's why you play the game, to see where you are, just to test yourself. Overall, I think this is a great test for both teams. And in the end, I mean, MSU showed why they you know, deserve to be among the elite. For me, a few things that stood out, guys, just getting right, you know, to specifics about the game. MSU, we talked about them being a run-and-gun team this season, and they certainly showed that in the very early moments of that game. I mean, even off of made baskets, they wanted to push the ball. I mean, there was a moment where, that I recall, Kentucky scored, got a quick layup. The ball was inbound so quick. You saw Denzel. It somehow got to Denzel Valentine, and about 2 seconds down the court, he scores a layup. But it just showed that run and gun type of mentality. In transition, MSU wants to push the ball. You're going to see that a lot this season. And you know what? I really want to call out their defense, because MSU's defense in that first half was great.
Stunning.
It was stifling. You know, and it almost looked like they were playing zone to a degree. But they were so packed in, you know, making sure they were controlling that paint so much that they were playing man-to-man, but it looked like a zone just because of, you know, just because of the spacing on the court defensively for the team. MSU did a great job defensively. Kentucky really struggled to find anything offensively. And what really opened things up for them in the second half, you know, really I thought, you know, Adrian Payne getting to that foul trouble hurt MSU. A lot. If there's anything I want to harp on MSU in this game, throughout this entire game, it has to be rebounding. I think MSU's rebounding has to be better, and I feel as though Dawson is a great rebounder, don't get me wrong, but when Payne went out and you had Ghana come in and Costello was out there as well, MSU struggled on the boards a little bit. I mean, they definitely struggled. You saw Kentucky getting a lot of second-chance opportunities, and you know that definitely got them back in the game. And how about Gary Harris, though? Gary Harris, guys, is a stud. He's going to the NBA after this year. I believe so. But looking at Gary Harris, looking at his game last night on the big stage, he was unguardable to a degree. You know what I mean? And and his improved defense. Defensively, Gary Harris definitely improved defensively, guys.
Yeah, and that's him off of injuries from last year. This is a healthy Gary Harris now.
He's 100% healthy.
So, yeah, I think that definitely will lead to him being drafted.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I think he's a lottery pick for sure. And speaking to your point about the inside play, you're right. As soon as Payne went off to the bench, nothing happened inside for MSU. Ghana was getting pushed out of the paint consistently every single time. And even though you have Dawson in there who can jump with them and you know, can, you know, use his strength and athleticism against Kentucky and match up with Kentucky, when he's the only guy who can do that, and then you have Cauley Stein, Randall, and Marcus Lee all attacking the glass, Dakari Johnson for the 5 minutes he played or whatever. But, you know, you have all these guys who are huge, super athletic.
Right.
You need more than just one guy in there who is going to own the paint. And Ghana, 13 minutes, one rebound.
Yeah, come on.
That's not good. He had zero defensive rebounds.
Right.
It makes sense why Costello's starting.
Absolutely.
It does. I mean, when you look Ghana at that, look at that stretch.
He just doesn't look like an interior player right now. And you got to say right now, because when you compare this MSU team, who's playing the number one team in the country, to, you know, years previous, they're light years ahead. Light years ahead. Mm-hmm. I was saying with my buddies last night, you know, with 10 minutes left in the second half, man, normally in a mid-November game, we have 18 turnovers by now.
Right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, they definitely took care of the basketball. You know, it brings me to a point. I didn't even have this in my notes, but Denzel Valentine, for me, I mean, there were moments in that game where Denzel Valentine, I mean, he showed, you know, why he's the best passer on this team and probably arguably the best passer in the Big Ten, maybe the country. I mean, his court vision is so good. There were times where he found Gary Harris for threes. There were times of the Brandon Dawson alley-oop. I mean, last season, Denzel definitely struggled. Let's face it, the entire team struggled with turnovers. And it's something we talked about these past few seasons, every single season, about their turnovers. But they surprisingly took care of the ball very, very well against a number one team in the nation.
Right, and a team with superior length and size and athleticism. Right. And they still controlled the ball and kept it to themselves. The one thing about Valentine that I would have liked is a little bit better decision-making, because he kind of drove the lane and left his feet, got out of control, and then would have to just throw up a wild floater.
Yeah,
I mean, it didn't seem like he hit any of them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that, I mean,
if you're going to go to the basket, possession. If you're going to go to the basket, go to the basket.
Right.
Yeah, that last possession, that was the best
Brandon
result
Dawson
of
tip.
Any of them. Yeah, exactly. Because we got an offensive rebound and won the game on it, but... You know, there were more than one occasion where he would drive the lane, get about halfway there. Mm-hmm. I think he got stuffed in the first half. He got blocked by somebody. And after that, every time he got into the lane, he'd be leaning away from the basket trying to hit a tough floater. I mean,
you know,
you have this great court vision. Somebody's open.
Yeah, yeah.
Pass the ball.
Right.
I mean, he's just
and I don't
throwing
think
up
that's
shots
Denzel's
that he doesn't
game.
Need to. Exactly.
Yeah, that's not Denzel's game. I think we saw a lot of, you bring up that, you know, you bring up him going to the rack strong and, you know, not just, like you said, not making good decisions. But I don't think that's Denzel's game, to be honest. Offensively, other than, you know, being a distributor, I struggle to find what Denzel's offensive scoring preference is. I mean, is he a jump shooter? Is he a slasher? I don't know.
Right.
We know that he can dish the ball out, I tell you that.
Exactly.
He's right now, you just label him as a distributor. And I thought he did a great job of that. But yeah, I mean, and Keith Appling. Oh, I had no idea he had as many points as he did until, you know, the game went off. And I look at the stat sheet and I'm sitting there looking at, 22 points I think it was?
22, 8, and 8.
Yeah, 8 and 8. I had no idea he was that close to a triple-double. But I thought Keith Appling did an unbelievable job of playing his role as a distributor, scoring when they needed him to score. I mean, you saw that late three-pointer when MSU was in panic mode, when Kentucky, you know, was on that run.
Tie game,
and Keith Appling mans up and nails that three on the corner to put MSU back up. That is a grown man play right there. And that comes with experience. That's what I say. When you talk about a young Kentucky team being on this big of a stage, these are guys that are just coming out of high school. They've never played in a game of this magnitude. They're still learning. This is a learning curve. This is a learning game for them. And it just showed you experience can trump talent in many instances, especially in the college. Maybe not more so in the NBA. That's a different type of – that's a different level where everybody – you got to have a superior talent for it to stand out. You know what I mean? Everybody's on a playing field where, you know, a guy like LeBron James stands out because he's just so – he's a freak. You know what I mean? But in the college game, when you look at the college game, guys are on an even keel almost, and the stars stand out because of moments like that. You know what I mean? Experience – definitely trump talent in this one. I think this, don't get me wrong, this Kentucky team will be good. I think they have a lot of talent. Looking at that Randall kid, oh my gosh. I mean,
he's a monster.
I mean, he was just throwing guys left and right. I mean, Adrian Payne couldn't handle him, Brandon Dawson couldn't handle him, and you know, he made them just look like little kids at sometimes. You know what I mean? And I think that came with size. I mean, he's 6'9, he's got a lot of muscle to him,
and he has legitimate post moves.
Yeah.
That's something you do not see from an 18-year-old freshman, is a guy who can turn and, you know, he can spin left, he can go baseline, and he's so quick.
Right.
It's ridiculous. Like, they couldn't even bring doubles because he was already beating his man almost immediately after catching it.
Yeah.
And
I mean, he
was
had
at
a few
the rim
spin moves.
Making a play.
Yeah,
I mean,
he had a few spin moves that, I mean, will turn anybody's head around.
He's too strong, and he's tough to handle, and the lefty shot throws everybody off.
Yeah, without a doubt. I believe we have a caller on line one. Kamiya, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. How you guys doing today?
Good, good.
I just wanted to say two things. The first thing I wanted to say about the MSU basketball, because they are just so great. They did a great, played a great game last night as I was listening to you guys talk. But one thing that I just didn't want you guys to forget is that you guys, Tom Izzo, he has to be, like, a great coach, because from, like, far as I can remember, he is, like, just taking, like the team that we have now isn't even a team that we probably had like a couple years ago. But Tom Izzo always makes sure that he coaches a team always ends up mattering, not just in the Big Ten, but in the nation. And so I think what they did last night was great, that he can just take a group of young men each and every time and make them matter in the NCAA. And I just think that he should just get mad props for that. I just think he's a great coach. I mean, he has to get some type of credit. Those guys, those boys, they play great. But Tom Izzo, I mean, we just got to know that. I mean, time after time, year after year, he manages to get, like, make an impact.
Right.
In NCAA. And so I just don't want you guys just to get to give him his credit because, I mean, he has to be a great guy.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks a lot for your call, Camille. And, you know, she makes a great point. Now Izzo, he became just the third coach now with 3 wins over number one teams over the last 8 seasons. He joined Seth Greenberg and Kevin Stallings in a rare, rare group. That's it. That's how that list looks. You got Kevin Stallings, you got Izzo, and you got Seth Greenberg. That's it. That's remarkable. And, you know, it hit me. You know, Camille brings it up. I mean, Izzo, of course, he's a legend. He's a shoe-in for the Hall of Fame right now, Basketball Hall of Fame. And, you know, it's so remarkable because he does this while not getting the recruits that a Kentucky or Duke or I could go on and on. He does this with recruits who are, you know, not the – they're good, don't get me wrong, but they're not the creme de la creme. You know what I mean? And he gets guys to stay and buy in to his blue-collar, just worth ethic type of basketball program that he's built over the years. And, you know, it's remarkable. It's remarkable. You have to just take a step back sometimes and just say, wow. And that was definitely one of those moments. So, guys, how good do you think this MSU basketball team is going to be? It's still the this thing we got to take into account. It's still the beginning of the season, only the second game of the
season.
Right,
I think they'll be very good. But let me just say one thing about this game that's a precaution to me. Calipari said it. He said, look, it's unfair to play a team that's more of a team. I have 7 freshmen. It's not fair. And Izzo said, well, if Johnny doesn't want to play, then he'll play. He'll do whatever he wants to do. Well, they still play the game. MSU obviously was the better team, but when Gary Harris held up the 1 yesterday, I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, this team knows they're number 1. Don't you think that's a little bit too early to have that number 1 hype? They have played.
You're trying to say that Gary shouldn't have put up the number 1?
He also said after the game, this means nothing. All said this means nothing.
Right. It's the end of the season.
Right, and that's what I'm saying.
So you don't like the number 1 ranking being here right now.
Exactly. And the reason is because we haven't played a Big Ten team yet. We haven't played an experienced team yet. And we haven't played anyone besides a whining John Calipari. So in my eyes, Al and Matt and Aaron, it's not a good thing for me right now to be number 1. Typically teams that are more under the radar are ones that go farther than the NCAA tournament every year.
And, you know, you've been with me when I've asked that question to the players. Even at Media Day, you know, we talked to the players and asked them, do they like the national recognition being placed on them, the target on their back, so to speak, you know, all the hype that goes with that, you know, coming into this season? Or would you rather fly under the radar? They're embracing it, which was surprising to me when I asked them that question. They're soaking it in. They like it. They feel as though it's a respect thing. And they feel as though they like having that chip on their shoulder. Even Izzo's a guy who I thought, you know, would deflect it. Even immediately, I mean, he said, you know, it's kind of, you know, he likes it. It wasn't a bad vibe. He didn't downplay it completely, saying, oh, you know, I would rather be 17th, 25th in the nation.
Oh,
you
know, and it's great for recruiting. I mean, it's the name. It's the brand. It's the number one team brand.
Right.
But for me, what it doesn't do is, if they're embracing the number one team, what goes up must come down. Everybody's going to be charging, oh, we're playing the number one team tonight. We're going to play our best.
They have that target on their back.
Ohio State sitting there with, a big loss in their players, but they're sitting there, okay, well, we've competed with Michigan State before. We've beaten Michigan State before.
But, you know, if there's any team that I think can handle that national recognition of being the number one team in the nation, I think it's this Michigan State team. They're experienced. They've had the hype coming into an NCAA tournament. They've had all that hype before, maybe not this early. But they've had the hype of being among the nation's best. And, you know, they're seniors now. This is a senior-laden team with senior leadership. I don't think it'll get to their heads, and I don't think they'll start getting complacent.
But look at
Izzo's not letting that happen.
Look at 2 years ago. 2 years ago, they were also ranked number 2. Yes, they weren't ranked number 1, but they had a very high ranking. And then they fell out. They fell out 2 years ago. So every time, in my eyes, that they're ranked very highly, it doesn't work out. Last year, they flew under the radar, went farther in the tournament than expected.
Yeah, but they still got blown out by Duke, though.
Yeah, but they still went farther than expected.
Yeah.
Now, 2 years ago, didn't go as far.
I had them going to the Sweet 16.
Did you? I don't know. Well, I mean, with everything, with the way they're so shaky.
It's still MSU. MSU is always highly touted to go you know, at least a Sweet 16 every single season. But, Matt, do you like it? Do you like the number one ranking?
I think it's meaningless.
I hate rankings, to be honest.
And I think the players think it's meaningless, too.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think, you know, it's November, what, 13th? This means literally nothing. And these players would know that. I mean, you mentioned, I think it was 3 years ago when it was the Summers, Lucas senior year. They start out preseason number two. They end up losing to UCLA in the first game of the NCAA tournament. Appling and Payne, the two senior leaders, were there. They know how that goes. They know that preseason accolades and early season success means nothing. This is the team that beat Michigan last year at home by 25 on their home floor when Michigan was one of the top-ranked teams in the nation. And then Michigan ends up rebounding and going to the Final Four. They know that, you know, your legacy is built in March. I don't think they care one iota about being number one November 13th.
Yeah.
And I think that's the right attitude.
I think that's what I say. I mean, you talk about, you know, going back when they were ranked that high. I mean, you talk about Dawson and Appling being on that team. And, you know, at Media Day, I mean, you and I, Matt, we talked to Appling, and Appling talked about, you know, he said, quote, "I've been here when we've been ranked high and then lost and everything went to shatter." So this is the second time around where you're ranked two or one in the nation. They know how to deal with it now. They know how to deal with it. They know how to have, you know, how to deal and carry themselves every single night with when it, you know, they know what it comes with having that target on your back as being the nation's best. It's going to be very interesting to see how they handle it. And you know, this MSU experienced team is going to, I think they're going to handle it well.
I think so too.
Now, after looking at Michigan the other night against South Carolina State, I mean, Caris LeVert coming out of nowhere, is he the new playmaker for Michigan?
They haven't played anybody.
South Carolina
State,
Alex.
They haven't played anybody.
Listen to yourself when you say that sentence.
Come on, brother.
No, I'm saying, like, I want to
compare. They haven't played anybody, though.
Of course, neither is Michigan State, technically.
They played Kentucky.
Yeah, but they haven't played a legitimate experience.
That's a legitimate contender. South Carolina State, come on, man.
Well, you didn't let me finish. I'm not saying look at this game. Look at the team they play. I'm saying look at this Michigan team this year.
I can't judge this Michigan team this year because they haven't played anybody.
You have to wait until they play someone.
Oh, yeah. Michigan, you could say at least say MSU has played Kentucky. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you think they can compete with State? You think State, although they lost Burke, you don't think?
Well, as far as Michigan State.
Yeah, I mean, Caris LeVert stepping in here, although it's one game. I mean, Caris LeVert might be the new playmaker for Michigan.
I got to see more from him. I got to see him play somebody first. But let's hit the break, fellas. We're going to dive into a quick Barbershop Wednesday. The hand checking rule. Yes, the hand-checking rule. I hate the rule. We're going to dive into that, and also we'll chat with Nissan Weaver. She'll be joining me in just a sec to talk about the fascinating sport of bodybuilding. Yeah, don't go anywhere. Current Sports will be right back.
Here, now, in the moment.
It's a fast-moving stream of news and information. I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. We are co-hosts for Here and Now, your source for news, updates, and great stories.
In the middle of your day, stay on top of what's happening.
With Here and Now, from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Don't miss a thing.
That's Here and Now, coming up at 2 p.m.
Hi, I'm Joe Lindstroth, producer of Current State.
And I'm Mark Bayshore, host of Current State.
We hope you'll join us for coffee and conversation on Tuesday, November 19th at 6 p.m. at Schuler Books Chapbook Cafe in the Eastwood Town Center.
Current State wants to hear what you think we should be covering here in mid-Michigan.
That's coffee and conversation with Current State, Tuesday, November 19th at 6 p.m. at Schuler Books Chapbook Cafe in the Eastwood Town Center.
We hope to see you there.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, we're taking your calls throughout this entire show on that MSU victory over top-ranked Kentucky last night, 517-355-9527, if you want to call in and express your thoughts on that. And also, we're taking your calls on our Barbershop Wednesday topic today, the hand-checking rule. Yes, the new rule that the NCAA has adopted when it comes to defense on the court. Now, guys, just want to run down the rule for those who don't know that are listening right now. What this rule plans to do is to make sure that you aren't guarding your defender with your hand. Now, keeping hand or forearm on an opponent will draw a whistle, putting two hands on an opponent will draw a whistle. Continually jabbing an opponent by extending an arm or placing a hand or forearm on the opponent will draw a whistle. And using an arm to impede the progress of a dribbler will draw a whistle. Many coaches around the league have expressed their thoughts on it. This is from Louisville's Rick Pitino. He says, quote, "It's the biggest change to our game. No question. Last season was terrible. It was an ugly season. We need to change the game. The one thing the coaches can't do, they can't gripe about it. The first 6 weeks will be a transition for the players as well as the coaches." Kentucky's John Calipari said, quote, "I think it's good for the game, but we are all wondering whether they will make the same calls in January, February, March, and they will make in November and December. I think they are convinced they are." This is from Kansas's Bill Self. This is the last one I'll read. "The best way to increase scoring and make the game better is to create situations to get more shots. More free throws doesn't make the game better." That's from Kansas's Bill Self. All right, guys, hand-checking rule. We saw it a little bit last night. Kansas and Duke, there was a little bit up there. I saw it once or twice in the Michigan State game last night as well. Do you like the hand-checking rule, guys?
I think the hand-checking rule does a lot of great things.
Oh, Lord. Go ahead.
All right. I think it does a lot of great things. Let's compare it to football for a second. Not because this is football, because there's a similar hand jabbing with receivers and corners on deep routes, whatever kind of route, where if you are continually grabbing or hand checking the receiver, you're going to be called for pass interference. Now, in the basketball standpoint, when you're playing, when you're guarding there on the post, when you're using your hands to defend a player, or even if you're not even in the post, if you are guarding a point guard up top, a shooting guard, and you're using your hand, you're slapping at the arms, that's okay. But when you're continually holding or putting your arm on someone, that I have a problem with. So I actually think this is a great rule, and it's great for the game, as Calipari said. Now, in terms of what you can do without the hands, because when a player is backing down on the post, if you're on the left block, and you're backing down the post, there's not much you can do. Your chest can't hold up against a full 200-pound frame, which for me, I totally understand why a forearm, a hand is necessary. However, I think it's necessary without holding it there for more than a couple seconds or more than a continuous back down. There's a 5-second back down for a reason. You can't keep backing down the post for 5 seconds. So I think a forearm for a second or a hand is okay. But I think holding it there continuously is unfair.
Matt?
Well, Al, really, it just becomes a question of the watchability of college basketball. And last year, scoring reached its lowest point since 1951-52. That should not be happening with the athletes we have now and the skill of these players coming in. Lowest mark from the three-point line since 1986. Foul calls, all-time low. Team shot the fewest free throws of any season since 1976. Assists on all-time low. Offense in general was down. I mean, look back. Let's go back 10 years. Look at the NBA in the Pistons' heyday when defense ruled all. And then they go with these hand check rules. They open things up. And now the NBA is probably one of the most exciting sports you can watch. I mean, I think ratings-wise, it's through the roof. The NBA is growing because you have guys who can make things happen off the dribble and aren't being hampered by guys constantly jabbing at the ball, constantly holding guys up when they're making cuts. It's not as much of a one-on-one game in college. You need guys moving around, running an offense, and you can't do that if guys are constantly being held as they go around screens or constantly being, you know, held up in the post by, you know, an arm bar or something. You need to open up the game so that you can see these athletes do what they're supposed to do. I think right now it's not good. I mean, you saw, 71 or 70-something free throws in the Ohio State game last night.
Yeah.
But if they are consistent with how they call it, by the time we get into maybe Big Ten season, I think it'll be a lot smoother. I think right now these are the growing pains. But overall, you know, saying that this is ruining the game or something, I think that's short-sighted. I think you got to give this time to actually be implemented and let the refs do their thing. Let the game change. It's not going to change overnight. I mean, at all.
Yeah, this is the thing. You both make very, very good points. And the problem that the biggest problem that I have with it, guys, is the way it's called in certain instances. for me, I definitely don't agree. I like it in this regard. I don't think that an individual who's guarding someone should, if especially if they, because I played basketball, you know, many, many years, still play it today. If a guy is trying to dribble past you and you use your arm or hand to try and impede his speed going past you, that's a foul. Totally, that's definitely what, when he talks about hand guarding and hand checking, that's one of the biggest problems I have. I hope it changes the game in that regard, because that goes on entirely too much at all levels of basketball, to be honest with you. The problem that I have with it, guys, and we saw a little bit of it last night, is when, you know, let's say the guy is backing you down. Clearly, okay, let's take, you know, Brandon Dawson and look at Randall last night. You know, Randall clearly has the big size advantage on Brandon Dawson. And Brandon, all he can do is he's just using his chest and lower torso to try and do anything to stop it. Whereas in the past, in the NBA, and they still allow this, I see it all the time in the NBA, even though you probably are not supposed to do it, you know, using that form, using that arm bar to kind of, you know, use your weight and momentum to try and impede that motion and try to defend that guy. I don't see anything wrong with that. I think that's been going in the game for, you know, in the 90s and the 80s and beyond that. I don't see how that hurts the game at all. If anything, I think it pushes that the guy who has the ball to become a better offensive player, to use a spin move or to get stronger to try and combat that. I see nothing wrong with putting an arm by a bar on somebody's back and saying, let's go at it, back me down, try it, and let's see what you got. I see nothing wrong with that. And I saw it last night where you had Dawson and Randall going at it, and if Dawson even just touches the guy with his hand, just a touch, they're blowing the whistle. I think it creates havoc as far as anyone looking at the game, because, you know, no one wants to sit around and look at free throws all day. I think you're going to see a lot of free throws. You're going to see games that normally take 2 hours to play, 2 hours and 30 minutes, you know, at the most. I think this rule could possibly change it to where a game could be lasting possibly 3 hours or more. And I think that's just not good for the game at all. You know what I mean? And to a degree, you got to let players play to a degree, because – you know, I saw a lot of ticky-tack fouls last night, and I've been seeing it so far this season, even in the exhibition season, as we try to get adjusted to this new rule. I saw a lot of ticky-tack fouls that are just like, come on, man, this is basketball. Let the players play, and that's what upsets me.
Al, I totally disagree, because there were plenty of times last night where you could say it was ticky-tack, but for example, Randall or Cauley Stein, when I think Payne was backing on the post, they kept their forearm, like a
What's
hand
What's wrong
on
with a forearm? What is wrong? Tell me what is wrong with the forearm.
There's nothing wrong with the forearm, especially when backing down. But it's when it's multiple seconds of holding the forearm.
What is wrong with that?
Because you can't. It's unfair.
How does putting up a forearm or a hand and or whatever it is while a guy's backing you down, how does that hurt the game?
It's like if someone in football had a helmet that was just plowing at a defender.
Football's totally different. That's totally
for multiple seconds while the ground for a pass, or if you have like a pad. And you're just using that to go
that
out for a
pass. That is totally different, Alex. That
it's
is
not.
Totally different. When you talk about football, football, first of all, is a more physical sport than the game of basketball.
Of
I mean, there's many things that football players can get away with. But putting a forearm of somebody who's trying to back you down and get closer to the basket, that hurts the game in no regard at all.
It's the same as a blocker, Al. It's you can't use a blocker, regardless if it's a forearm. It could be an elbow. You can't use a blocker to hold something back. It's like using...
An arm is totally different from a 300-pound man.
It's like using steroids to go help you play better.
Using a forearm, you're comparing using
okay.
a forearm to steroids.
Guys,
come
we're
on
going, we're going way, way off
no
trail.
You're enhancing. You're enhancing it. You can't
that
use an
enhancer.
That
makes no sense. Go, Matt, you got something?
Take the caller.
Do we have a caller right now?
No,
we don't have
any. Aaron's just talking. All right. I think, you know, if somebody's backing you up in the post and you've got your arm on him, I just feel like it's way too easy for you when they, let's say he turns around and shoots a hook shot. What's stopping you from continuing your force with your arm and just pushing them away? How's that
then
not
a foul? Then that's a foul. That should be called a foul.
Well, that's way too much of a judgment call to ask all these refs to make.
Why don't you
just take that out of the game entirely?
No,
then
don't
you'd
take it out the game entirely.
About.
The forearm has been a part of basketball for so long.
Basketball is changing, Al.
It's for the worse in this regard, I think. I mean, I think basketball, I want to make a general statement around. I think basketball and I've said this before, the game of basketball is becoming too soft. Way too soft. The rules Right, looking at the NBA right now, the rules, and it's been like this since the Jordan era, I think, the rules are designed to help people offensively more, I think, and allowing, you know, guys like LeBron to throw up 30, 40 points, where so as back in the 80s, when you had the bad boys and whatnot,
back in the 80s,
guys back on there. But
the Celtics used to put up like 116 points a game.
But it wasn't an easy 116 points a game. If you got to that mark, oh, salute to you. You need a Medal of Honor. You know what I mean? I mean, I just think the game is becoming too soft, guys. And it's frustrating to see a rule like this. It's going to be interesting to see how it's called throughout the season, but it upsets me. So, all right, let's take a quick break. When I come back, we're going to get to our guest for today's show. Guys, you guys bodybuild at all?
Yeah, I'm big into it.
Matt is huge. Oh, yeah, I'm huge into it.
We'll try.
Jacked right now.
I need to hit the weights, man. But we're gonna dive into the sport of bodybuilding. And we have a very special guest who is tearing up the world of bodybuilding, and she's right from here, Michigan, folks. We're going to dive into our guest. Stay tuned. Much more to get to on Current Sports. Don't go anywhere. Can't touch this. My music hits me so hard. Makes me say, oh, my Lord, thank you for blessing me. What am I doing? Can't touch this. Yeah, that's how we living, and you know, can't touch this.
What happens to the newspapers, Christmas tree lights, cell phones, and even the cars we discard for recycling? Why is so much of the stuff we get rid of shipped overseas? On the next Fresh Air, we talk with journalist Adam Minter, whose parents owned a junkyard, about the global billion-dollar trash trade. Minter is the author of Junkyard Planet. Join us.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Well, we just talked hoops. It's about the entire hour, guys. We want to get to our guest for today's show. Our guest for today is Current Sports here on the show. You know, we love sports. They kind of fly under the radar, so to speak. You know, we've had curling on the show. We've talked about CrossFit on the show. And today we bring you another one, the world of bodybuilding. We have the privilege of welcoming one who is having some pretty good success in the sport, Nissan Weaver. Thank you for joining me today. How you doing?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
First of all, Nissan, I got to ask you because, you know, bodybuilding, you know, when you think about bodybuilding, you think about macho guys, you know, guys involved with the sport. First of all, Nissan, you're a female involved with the sport of bodybuilding. How did you get started?
I am. I was always an athlete and I always wanted to do it. I always had a lot of natural muscle. Both of my parents were athletes and I didn't feel comfortable with my muscle, but until I got older. And so, I don't know, one day it just kind of hit me, like, I have to embrace it, and what better thing to do than to get into bodybuilding. And I saw that there were other divisions opening in the line of bodybuilding, especially with women, which the division that I compete in is bikini bodybuilding, which is the lower, the less muscular division of women's bodybuilding. And I just said I was going to do it, and I never looked back.
So before you made a decision to try to pursue, you know, to pursue bodybuilding, were you already a gym rat? Did you already work out a lot?
I did work out. I worked out through just growing up I did because of the athletics that I was involved in. But I was actually on disability a couple years ago for about 2 years, so I couldn't lift anything for about 2 years, over 5 pounds, and that took a toll on me. I lost a lot of muscle mass. I was the smallest that I had ever been, and just quite unhappy with myself after I got off of disability and was, you know, admitted to go back to work. So, then because I was unhappy with myself and, you know, I just wanted a change and I wanted to feel good, I started lifting again, and, you know, and that was actually when I did decide to go ahead and compete. And then, like I said, I just started and I never stopped, and it's been treating me pretty good.
Now, Nissan, I want to talk about the competition itself. You said you participate in bikini bodybuilding. Talk about the competition itself, and what are you guys judged on?
Bikini is basically judged on overall, I mean, of course, it's all bodybuilding, so you're being judged on your body. Bikini is an overall presence. You get judged on your tan. You get judged on your stage presence. Basically, like, your connection with the audience and the judges, you know, themselves, along with your body and your symmetry and with, like I said, with bikini, it's the less muscular version of women's bodybuilding. So, ideally, if you're looking through a fitness magazine and you see, you know, an average woman, but she has nice muscle tone and just that athletic build, that is your idea of bikini, the bikini division. So it's like that Victoria's Secret model with muscle.
Gotcha. So it's not about, when it comes to bikini bodybuilding, it's not about trying to, who has the bigger muscle? It's not about that.
No, it's an overall package.
Gotcha. And you said, Nissan, you said you're judged on your tan? Can you explain that a little bit for me? That threw me for a loop just now.
Yes, everyone. Okay, so we get tan for our shows. Each division does.
Right.
Now, we get tan basically to, you know, obviously you can see that, like, darker people, they have better muscle definition because you can see it better. And, I mean, you know, I guess as an athlete or as a bodybuilder, you'll hear around, you know, trying to find the best lighting to get the best picture. Well, it's definitely about, like, shadows and everything to make your muscles look, you know, all that much better. So with the tan, when you get on stage, the lights are so bright and they're so focused on you that they can easily wash you out. So I'm a naturally tan person, and, I mean, I'm pretty dark for your average person, and, you know, I'm mixed. I'm Filipino and black, but...
Mm-hmm.
So I'm brown, but if I stepped on stage, I wouldn't look like that. I would look very washed out, and you wouldn't be able to see my muscle definition. So we do get judged on our overall tan and how it makes our muscles look. You know, you can step on stage too dark to where, you know, it's unflattering. So the idea is, like, you know, if you saw a bodybuilder in person right before they got on stage, they would look really, really dark and really orange and, you know, just very unappealing to the eye. But once you get on stage, you look normal because the lights are so bright.
Right.
And, you know, it makes your physique look all that much better.
Okay, that clears things up. That makes sense then.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen.
We don't do it.
Right. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us on Current Sports, we are talking about the fascinating world of bodybuilding, sitting and talking with Nissan Weaver, who's had some pretty good success in the world of bodybuilding. So, Nissan, I got to ask you, what is your workout regimen and routine like? What do you eat?
Oh, I get asked that question quite often. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of different aspects that you can go in with nutrition in this field and just, like, you know, eating healthier in general. For a long time, I mean, at least, like, for the last year, I went along with the whole eating clean, which, I mean, eating cleaner to a lot of people is like eating healthier foods, eating a lot of lean protein, eating, you know, sweet potatoes and brown rice and vegetables and stuff like that, and then only treating yourself to certain sugars and processed foods and like that, like, you know, once a week or twice a week or something, whatever you allow yourself. Which is a great way to go about losing weight or staying in shape, but it's not something that you can keep long term.
Right.
You end up craving things, and then you start binging, and then you either gain all the weight back or you feel bad about yourself. So it's really all about balance. I follow a nutritional scientist, Lane Norton. I just started working with him on nutrition, and he's all about balance. So, you know, definitely keeping those good foods in your diet, but, you know, maintaining the right macronutrients for your height and your body weight to maintain a healthy body weight with, you know, being nice and fit and toned and, you know, seeing your abs and everything, but not having those cravings to binge. So, like, this morning I had, for my so-called macros, we figure out certain numbers. So this morning I had, you know, I had, for me, for my height and weight, I had three egg whites. I had two you know, those little Eggo waffles.
Oh, I love them things. I love those.
I know. I just bought them because I'm like, I can fit them in my numbers. So it worked out. So I definitely had those this morning with, you know, like an ounce of bananas and Italian sausage. So before, okay, I wouldn't have eaten that when I was just clean eating. I would have had, you know, let's say like just oatmeal and egg whites and, you know, a scoop of peanut butter or something.
Right.
So, you know, there's different ways you can go about it. But right now I'm doing the whole, you know, counting your macros and making sure I don't fail.
You got to have cheat days, though, right, Nissan? You just kind of pick out one day to say, hey, I'm doing well, but you know what? Man, I'm just not feeling it today. Eat some ice cream one day.
Well, see, that's the thing with counting your macros. Mm-hmm. If I wanted a brownie or a cookie, I can have it. I can have it just as long as I fit it in with my numbers. And then I just, you know, I go through the rest of the day, you know, alternating my foods to make sure that I'm hitting my numbers and not going over or going under.
Right.
So that's the thing with like following Lane Norton is the science behind, you know, a healthy living and dieting and not causing yourself to fail by binging. So yeah, like yesterday, if I wanted to go have frozen yogurt, I can go have frozen yogurt, or like I had a cookie yesterday, but you know, then like I had that cookie. But then, you know, I considered the fats and the carbs and the calories that were in that cookie. And so then I got to go through the rest of my day with other foods that would allow me to have that.
Gotcha. Okay. So there's some cheating, but you're still counting at the same time. Nissan, before I let you go, I want to ask you about something when it pertains just to bodybuilding in general. Because when it comes to women bodybuilders, I'm sure you've heard this chatter before, but there are many out there that think women who have, you know, the bulging muscles or the toned, you know, just, you know, the muscles everywhere, that bodybuilders get that stigma of having. It may be different when it comes to bikini bodybuilding, though, but I'm sure you've heard this chatter and criticism that it's not physically appealing in contrast to that of a male's physique and that it takes away from the aspect of femininity. What are your thoughts on that?
I have been told that quite often, actually, that, you know, oh, don't get too big, or, you know, make sure, you know, your muscles don't get too manly. I mean, last time I checked, I was still a woman.
Right.
So if you find a man that looks like me or any of the other competitors that are not obviously in the, like, the bodybuilding division of women, but like in figure or women's physique or bikini division, especially in the bikini division, if you find a man that looks like a girl in the bikini division, I don't know what men you're hanging around.
Right.
So, like, I feel bad for that man that looks like that woman, you know, or so
right.
If you find a woman that you can compare a man to. You know, there are other divisions and other women that do have an extreme amount of muscle, but it's not like it's alienated. You know, we have the same genetic makeup to have muscle. So why can't we own it?
Right.
Very, very
true.
I've been told that, you know, oh, well, I can see your shoulders through your shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, well, thank you for noticing. Like, that makes me excited. That's my hard work. And it really is all about, like, how you feel comfortable and what makes you feel sexy. If your muscles make you feel good about yourself, then own it. You know, don't worry about what other people say, because it's not easy. If it was easy, everyone would do it.
That is
it really is a shame that, like, some people will try to, you know, beat other people down for their hard work. But you wouldn't think that it was okay to go up to someone who is overweight or underweight with no muscle to say, I'm sorry, don't get too skinny or don't get too fat. It would be looked down upon. So it's the same idea. You know, don't tell a fit woman, don't get too muscular, or you look manly.
Right. Nissan, that is such a great message. And I tell you what, we're out of time right now, but I want you to keep us posted on what you have and your competitions coming up. We'll announce it on the show tomorrow. How's that sound? All right.
Oh, sounds good. Thank you.
Hey, there you have it. Nissan Weaver. Thanks so much. We got to have you on soon again. All right, guys. Well, good show. I think I want to try bodybuilding. What do you guys think? I don't know. I'm a skinny guy, man.
I can't eat just peanut butter and egg whites.
Yeah, if I had peanut butter, oatmeal, and egg whites,
I would lose my mind.
I think I'd waste away.
Right.
Right. B, I would just be unhappy.
Just an happy guy. Come on, Current Sports, just mad at the world every time. Oh, that is hilarious. All right, before we leave, special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Production assistants Alex Schrag and Matt Lucky. Engineer Aaron Young. Peter Wharf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks to all of you out there for tuning in. Thanks to Nissan Weaver for joining me. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. As always, take care, have a fantastic day, and be easy, people.